Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
Well, welcome to being with us tonight. I would like to talk to you about three bills out of the more than 1,000 that are, I would say, creeping around the Capitol, because some of them are not very nice bills. And so I think that as good citizens, we need to know what our legislature is doing. So I'm going to talk to you about three of them. And so that is the first one, Senate Bill 5181, which also has a companion in the House, and that is HB 1296. So you know a Senate bill because it starts with an SB. You know it's a House bill when it's HB. So both of these bills will go through their respective body, the House or the Senate, and then they will move to the other body. If they are retained in similar fashion, then they can cross and work it out fairly easily. If one body wants to change it in any way, then it needs to go back to the originating body and have them agree with it. And if they don't agree, then it goes back and forth. And sometimes they may go back and forth so many times that they will put a task force together, or they will just say, this is too complicated for this year. We're going to have to do it in the interim. But this bill is made national attention, and it is a bill that has eminent interest to me for a number of reasons. One, I'm a mom. Two, I'm a grandma. Three, I'm a school teacher. And four, I help write part of the underlying law. So I have a lot of background on this bill. And I want you to know that despite what our legislator said on the House floor, and if you have a very strong stomach, you might want to listen to the floor debate on 5181. The debate was so many examples of poor debate. And maybe poor debate, I am judging as a school teacher on trying to get to resolution. I guess if I were not a school teacher and I was saying, how can you make this so complicated and ridiculous and off track that nobody knows what the heck is going on? Yeah, maybe they would have gotten a good grade for that. But that's not how I run. So anyway, it was the debate on 5181, and unfortunately, one of our legislators in the Senate made some comments that I rolled my eyes, and I won't say what else I did, because they were not on topic. And to say the premise of there are so many bad parents that we really don't need parents involved is just frightening as well as disconcerting to me. I believe that, and I know that there are already processes that if a school teacher, the principal, or the school counselor knows that there's an issue with the parents, which as school teachers, you know a lot of things. And I used to tell parents, if you don't believe everything your kids say about me, I won't believe everything they say about you. And that would get a laugh because sometimes, things are taken out of perspective and it's best to go back and parents and teachers and working things out. So you do know the parents usually pretty well. And so the idea that we are going to make public policy based on a minuscule amount of parents that may not be working in their child's best interest, because there's already a process for that. So to burden every other parent with the regulations in 5181 is really not okay. So that's a premise problem. Secondly, the problem with this bill is that it was an initiative last year. And originally, the legislature said they didn't like the bill. And so about 450,000 of us citizens signed that initiative to put it to a vote. Well, the legislature could see that parents really do think that they should have parental rights to know what's happening with their child. And so they went ahead and voted it into law last session. They voted into law, no big brouhaha about that. And at the time, if you're a regular listener, you will know I said, beware, because I don't trust this legislature that they won't play the game. Well, even without a crystal ball, my crystal ball was correct. And so now they've come back and said, oh, there are so many things about this bill that are so difficult to understand. And so we just really need to change it a little bit. Well, change it a little bit. It's more like putting a nuclear bomb to it. So I think it's really important that we realize that if a parent does not know what's happening to their child, your child comes home and they're distressed. And if they won't tell you, or you don't have resources at the school to inform you, then your child's upset. You have no idea what's going on. And it's so disingenuous to say, oh, a child is not an adult until they're 25, that the mental development in the brain does not complete until age 25. So we're going to change all we do with juvenile detention and how we process different things because the brain's not developed until 25. So on one hand, you're saying that. And on the other hand, you say at 13, you can make the decision on your health care or to get an abortion. And that's fine because at 13, you're smart enough. Well, you can't be both. You can't be smart enough to make life-changing decisions, literally, or your brain is not developed enough that we can hold you accountable for your crimes. So this is crazy making that the policy is not consistent, and good policy is always consistent. Another thing good policy is that it has Republicans and Democrats on it. If you have a bill that is all Democrats or all Republicans, you have a lazy legislator or you have terrible policy because neither should happen. If you have good policy, you need to go to the person in the opposite party, talk it over with them, see what their concerns would be, ask them to talk to some of the other people in their caucus and get back to you. And if they get back to you and say, yeah, we think this is a good bill and I'm willing to sign and so is representative such and such and such and such. And then you get everybody's name on it so that when people look at it, they know it's bipartisan, that both Republicans and Democrats think that this is a good piece of legislation, that it's good law. And that's how every bill should be, in my opinion. So we are in a legislative session right now that's called jam it through. We have the majority and we don't care about you. And that is not a good public policy environment. So as I've said before, but in case you are new to this, there are rules in how conversations are done on the floor of the House and the Senate. And I will talk about the House because that's where I spent time. And we and the Senate have the same rule that you have a certain amount of time that you can speak and you'll get called on by the speaker or the lieutenant governor who runs the House, the Senate. And so you get your term to speak. You have certain rules about how you can't swear and, just kind of basic protocols of being polite so that we don't end up in, fist fights or anything. So that's all well and good. And if somebody were being obnoxious, that they can be silenced by putting their microphone off. And then the rule of the body, the speaker or the head, lieutenant governor in the Senate, can ask the members of the body by a 2/3 majority, is this person being offensive? 2/3. And it's been that way for 132 years. Never seen it done. Never. In the 8 sessions I was in, I never saw that done. No, it was more than that. 15 sessions. So it's really important that that protocol of having a 2/3 be able to stop somebody from speaking. Now, there are other ways. You can go up to the speaker and, say that that person, ask them to put the bill down. And for some reason you get information that that people aren't going to vote for the bill or that they found a flaw in the bill. You can ask the speaker to put the bill down temporarily while you negotiate with the person or the issue or something that came up. So there are other ways to handle it. But to tell somebody that you don't have your whatever it is that time, 2 minutes or 3 minutes to speak, because we don't like what you're saying, and we only need half of the body to decide. That is a 132-year protocol that Speaker Jenkins pushed through that now they, having the majority of more than 50 people, so more than half, they can at any time decide anybody can be stopped from speaking. That is not okay. So if you believe in free speech, Speaker Jenkins needs to know. And you also need to know to tell your members of the legislative body that the rules of politeness and free speech that have worked for 132 years, all of a sudden it doesn't work now. I think that that's very scary. So let's go back to 5181. So now, so as I was saying, as you listen to the debate, think about, does this really matter to the discussion? The discussion is that parents need to know various things. And one of the things in 5181 is if their child has been molested by a teacher. Hello, I wrote that bill and I put up with a lot of flack from a lot of people that were mostly NEA, although at the time, WEA, I was a member of WEA, the Washington Education Association, and even they hassled me. And I was like, I'm a member of this body and I am a teacher and I have no sympathy for any teacher that molests a child. Bang, that's the end of that conversation. So when I wrote that law, I was very specific. And of course, as time has gone on, we've seen that law implemented and people arrested. And that is fine with me. So now this bill says that the school doesn't need to tell the parent. And it's the discussion's been all over the board. So I'm going to give you the extent of the discussion so that wherever it lands, you'll know 48 hours or 72 hours. And they're saying, you know, when things happen, there's so many different things that need to be done that we can't tell parents right away because parents will get in the way of the situation and the police reporting and such. Well, you know what? As a mandated reporter, which every school teacher is, I've had to go and report different situations like this. And, you know, the police have come to school and they usually have the principal in the meeting because if it ends up in court, that it's better for the principal to be out of the building than the teacher out of the building. And so the principal would sit down. So he or she was available to know all the details, which, you know, I as teacher would give to the officer. And then, you know, the officer would come up with a plan. And very frequently, the officer would ask me questions about, you know, different issues that had been signals that maybe something wasn't right before. And, you know, a variety of things. But in every case, I mean, there was one case where they just asked me to keep the child after school so that they could deal with what they needed to deal with without the child being there. So we made a plan together, the school, the police, and, you know, and the parents, so that everybody was involved in working together for the best interest of the child. And that did not take 48 hours or 72 hours. It was, you know, usually within an hour or two after the information was found out, or it was, you know, a break where I could get back and, you know, let the principal know that he needed or she needed to call the police and let them know. And then they would come after school when I could get into it. So I've been through this is what I'm saying. And I know how it works. And the idea for it to not happen for 48 or 72 hours is completely insane. And for them to say, well, you know, it's really complicated on when immediate can be. Immediate is when you can make it through the situation. You know, go have your nails done and then come back and say, okay, well, now I'm ready. No. And you also, if you have a peer, which unfortunately I did have a peer at one point, and, you know, and so, you know, you don't want to say, you know, it's just not comfortable to be around that person until after all the information is out to the police and the principal so that there are no other interventions. Same thing was true when I worked in a bank. When you're robbed, you don't tell your peer next to you, I've just been robbed. You set up the dang alarm and then you go to the branch manager who is instructed to take you away from everybody else so that you can keep in your mind exactly what happened so that the first complete story is given to the police or the FBI in that case. Been through that too. So I know how this works. So I'm listening to this debate and I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is so much baloney. And having written part of this bill, I knew how important it is that we do not allow special interest groups that want to hide whatever they want to hide from parents. It's not parents last. It's the school letting the parents know as soon as they possibly can. So one of our senators, Senator Jamie Peterson, went on a news broadcast and said that this was the law in our state, that they had changed it down to age 13, and that he thought it was important to be at 13, that if you are physically able to have a baby, you're physically able to make decisions on what you need to do. Well, I'm sorry. I have three daughters, And 13 is not the age that I would have wanted them making those decisions. So luckily I didn't have to deal with that. So his comments to me were not in line with my thinking. But then I had to think, oh, this is Jamie Peterson. And Jamie Peterson in 2018 was the prime sponsor of paid pregnancies, surrogate parenting. It was a 51-page bill. And a friend of mine who is very involved in pregnancy information, and she's considered a national expert, she called me and said, do you know what this bill says? And I'm like, no. So she alerted me to what it was. And I read the 51 pages. And to say steam was coming off of my head was probably not too far from being the truth. And in that, there were provisions that were anti-scientific for mother's health. So in that bill, another Peterson bill, you hire a woman to have your baby. And then once you've hired her, you can tell her she can or cannot breastfeed after the baby's born. She can or cannot hold the baby after the baby is born, and a number of other things. And as a woman who has had multiple births, I don't want anybody telling me what I need to do after I give birth to a baby. And any of you dads who've ever been in the delivery room, you know, don't mess with your wife when she's just had a baby. So anyway, I was appalled at that bill. And I called two gentlemen that are legislators that I respect. And I asked them, why did you vote for this? This is something as a man, you know better than. And why did you vote for this? And they said, oh, that Jamie Peterson had told them that they couldn't amend the bill or things would not be coming through his committee that were their bills. And I said, well, so they said, we didn't even know that was in the bill. And I said, well, that's a failure of the staff in not letting you know that that was in the bill. So I was unhappy about that in 2018, and worked with my girlfriend, who was very active in testifying and putting data together for that. But the bill passed, and that is among, if not the first, paid surrogacy bill in the country, which has now been the model for other states. And there are a number of things in that bill, beyond what I talked about here, that I have disagreement with. So it doesn't take enough care of the birthing mom to be sure that she hasn't done this repeatedly and it's hurting her body, checking her mental health, that she was competent to make these decisions, on and on. But so in 2018, I knew this was a problem of concern to me. And now this bill is also of concern to me. And it made national news that the state of Washington is even processing these bills. So I don't like when we were at the example of bad, and both 5181 and 1296 are that, in my opinion. So if you have an opinion, let your legislator know. Okay, bill number two. If you think you're paying enough taxes or not paying enough taxes, you want more taxes, then just sit and relax. But if you think that you are paying plenty of taxes, which I feel like I'm paying plenty of taxes, then you need to listen. Because HB 1334 changes the amount of taxation that they can charge from 1% to 3%. I fought this on the King County Council when they tried to pass it numerous times. I will tell you that it will be my crystal ball. I already said I don't have one. But if I did have a crystal ball, I will tell you that in a very short amount of time, if HB 1334 passes, that it will be instantly swept up by the King County Council and it will be yes. And you will be paying more on your property taxes than you currently are. This is a very serious bill to be moved from 1% to 3%. So it too was an initiative. And, you know, now the legislative body has not been happy that they haven't been able to increase taxes as fast as they could. And there used to be a 3% cap. So what they may say to you is, well, what are you blibbering about? It used to be 6%. We're just doing 3%. That doesn't even keep up with inflation. So it's just good. And my response to that was, we are getting more people coming to this state who are paying for their taxes too. And so we shouldn't be able to go all the way up to 3%. So, you know, on the federal level, we're looking at DOGE on what could be cut and coming up with all kinds of ideas. I will tell you that if I were hired to be the DOGE of the King County budget, oh my goodness, I could find lots. So anyway, I don't believe that this is a necessary increase. And I think it will put a lot of people out of their homes. I do know a neighbor across the street from me actually moved because she could no longer afford the property taxes on the house. And, you know, and that's that. It's just not okay. And for some of my neighbors who are in their 80s, the idea that, you know, half of the bill is school taxes, which I love schools, obviously being a teacher, but I also don't think that people in their 80s should be put out of their houses for the increases that keep coming from all kinds of taxing sources. And at one point, I was told there were 178 taxing districts possible in King County. And so if you want to know how many taxing districts you have, you can go on the amazing assessor's website and look up your property and see all the taxing districts that you have and how much is going into each of the different taxing districts. Now, there's a little issue that it's a state and then local school taxes. So it looks like it's only one or the other, but that's not accurate. It's both of them. So you need to add those two numbers together to get the total. And then there's another part on the assessor's webpage, John Wilson. He does an awesome job of being transparent and getting things done. It shows how much was approved by the legislative body and how much was approved by a vote of the people. And lots of times people would call me and say, well, I think this is too high or I don't like this tax. And I would look it up on the website or if I knew it off the top of my head. And I'd say, well, actually, that was approved by your neighbors and you at whatever the percentage was, 52% or 60%. And people would go, I did that? And I'm like, yeah, that was done by you and your neighbors. So if you don't like it, you need to let your legislative body know and it, you know, that you want that change. But, you know, it was voted by you. So we probably aren't going to do that until there is a major reason of people going, well, we did that, but now we don't think that that's the right thing anymore. So 1334 is the increase in your property taxes. So let your legislature know. Again, I'm going to say it now and I'll say it at the end. How do I let my legislator know? 1-800-562-6000. Or you can get on ledge.wa.gov and look up your legislator's emails and send them directly an email. And if you know your legislator's name, you can type their first name dot their last name at ledge.wa.gov. And that's the formula for everybody's name and address and let them know. And, you know, it does on the 800 number, it does allow you, and you can do it online too, off the webpage at ledge.wa.gov to let your legislators know what you think. And then it asks if you would like to have them respond. Well, unfortunately for me, my legislators don't often answer any of my responses, and I was feeling kind of sad that they wouldn't answer my responses until I was at a party and mentioned to a multi-group party, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and saying, you know, how I was not pleased that I had not gotten responses to my six comments last year. And they started laughing, and they go, Kat, don't take it personally. None of us get responses either. So hopefully you will get a response. All right, next one. This one is a new one. And so I said at the beginning it was going to be three, but this one I am really concerned about. And this is one that has been written by Senator Hasegawa. And what they are doing is passing a bill that expedites pardons or clemency for criminal illegal immigrants so they can continue to live illegally in the United States and avoid deportation. It's a bill that highlights the Senate Bill 5103. Again, this one's 5103, fast-tracking petitions to the Clemency and Pardons Board. So, you know, we have federal laws, and every time that we decide to go against federal law, and as you know, our last attorney general did, I believe, around 80 lawsuits to the feds, you know, we get known federally. And, you know, a lot of government is relationship. If you are helpful on, you know, helping make sure that you contribute towards bridges, or you, you know, you do things that are helpful to the feds, when you need help, they are more likely to be helpful to you. And, you know, I understand from some emails I got from some constituents who heard Bob Ferguson as governor's press release the other day, which I did not see, but I got, as I said, emails telling me this. He was very upset that he had not gotten, or the state had not gotten, some federal money. And to say that he was surprised, I was surprised he was surprised. You know, it's going to happen because we have done things like this bill to say we are not going to follow federal law. And whether we as a state like the new federal law, we now have a new president who got the majority nationally. And so there is a new way of looking at things. And I think this is going to be something that will cause even more issues coming into our state. And, you know, some of the people that are on the list are people who have committed crimes, whether it be child sex offender, bank robbers, drunk drivers. You know, they have committed crimes that have an adverse impact. And these are the people that they are first looking at. So I worked with ICE when I was a legislator, because there was much being said about ICE that I had no firsthand knowledge. And so, as I usually do when I don't have firsthand knowledge, I call and find out. And having the ability of having a title to say I'm Representative Lambert, and we have a bill coming through my committee, and it is on ICE. And, you know, some of the legislators in my committee, council members, are saying certain things. And I would like to know your response to those things. Well, the director was very gracious, and she said, would you like to come down and tour our facility and ask the questions from the people who work here? And I'm like, wow, okay. So I spent the day walking through the ICE Center and hearing their protocols and how they do things, and watching the people who were being detained walk around, no guards, no handcuffs, just walking around, talking to everybody. And I'm like, well, this is not what I'm being told is going on here. And they're like, no, I'm sure that's not what you're hearing. So anyway, there is a very fair system of looking at, why is the person here? What are their connections? Do they have a job? Have they committed any crime since they've been here? And that was during the Biden administration nationally. And now we have a Trump administration nationally. And, you know, there are 11 million people who have come in to our country illegally. And so it's important that we know who is here. Whether you agree with open borders or you don't agree with open borders, it's important to know who are these people and what are they doing here. So the idea that Senator Hasegawa, and now a bill has been passed, now it doesn't make it law yet, so it gives you an opportunity to write in to your legislators and talk to them about Senate Bill 5103 to see what you think. If you'd like to know more about this, you can go on the Jason Rantz show and hear his presentation on that. I'm trying to figure out what day this was actually from. I don't remember the exact date, but you can look on his show, and obviously it was in the last couple of days. So you can get more input on that. And you can also listen online, since you know the bill number, to the floor debate to see what you think about that bill. Okay, so those are the three, 5181 and its companion, 1296, on parental rights, which I have lots of feelings about, as you know. And then HB 1334, which is raising your taxes. And for those of you that like taxes, and several of you have talked to me in the past, and as I've told them, you are perfectly able to give more tax money. All you need to do is write a check and send it into the county or the state or the federal government and say, I would like to make a contribution to whatever you want to make a contribution to. And the levels of government would be more than happy to take your money if that's what you want to do. So you have an option, if you don't like this, to be able to spend more money if you would like to. And then, of course, this last bill that is very recent, Senate Bill 5103, about fast-tracking the pardons. So that sounds like, oh, well, you know, it's more efficient. Let's be more efficient. Well, when you fast-track through the court and the clemency board, you are taking away other cases that are citizens that are trying to get in to get things done. And so you are actually penalizing people who live here who pay the taxes from getting their government services because of this. All right, so now a good one. So this is a good bill. Yay, we got to one. And it is Senate Bill 5434, and it's the Emergency Powers Bill. And even the governor said in one of his opening speeches that he felt that there needed to be more parameters around governor's powers. He was on, governor and I were on the King County Council when maybe he wasn't. Anyway, there were people on the King County Council who are Democrats who at some points were like, oh my gosh, yes, this has gone on too long, that Governor Inslee kept the power of the executive and legislative branch, which are emergency powers, for much longer than needed to be. And Dow kept the powers just as long as the governor did. And my concern at the time was, we come here every Monday. If there's an emergency, we can handle it, or you can call a special session. So for the governor to have his powers over the state, but the King County executive to have his powers coordinated for the same amount of time, I did not feel was okay at all. Because as I said, we are there every Monday, and you don't need to have the power of the legislative branch and the executive branch when we're sitting there on a weekly basis and can come in earlier. So anyway, the reason this is a good bill is that I think Republicans and Democrats and even the new governor have said, yes, we need to get some parameters about this and have it reasonable. Who would have thought a reasonable bill? And it's also a good bill because there's seven Republicans and nine Democrats. So it's a bipartisan bill. And it's led by a Republican who went out and got even more Democrats to agree to the bill. Whoa, good job. It's bipartisan and it has pretty much a Republican and Democrat close spread. So one of the things that the governor said in his speech was to look at how we could come together even during an emergency to figure out how we could do certain things. And especially now that we have Zoom and Teams and lots of other online ways of getting together, that is good. But if all of our power was out and the grid was down, to be able to get what they call the four corners, the Republican House, the Democrat House, the Republican Senate, the Democrat Senate, it's called the four corners. And Governor Gregoire was awesome in really holding meetings on a regular basis with the four corners, that she wanted to know what the four corners were thinking and if it was something she agreed with, how she could be helpful. And it was really, really well done. I really respect how she handled her meetings with the four corners. So that would mean you'd only need to get four people together with the governor to work it out. And then if each of the four corners agreed that there needed to be an emergency put together, emergency powers, then you could do it. And also, I hope that the bill would be that the four corners or the legislative bodies could say, you know, this is enough time, or to say you only have a certain amount of time and then it needs to be redone so that you don't have 900 days of being in power, which is essentially usurp the voice of any of the citizens. And in my book, I will be writing about some of the things that happened on the emergency powers, and some of the things that did not pass the straight face test. And I won't go any further than what else I thought. But being that the emergency powers were in one place and not spread between the two branches, making legislative decisions was not good. So as I've been looking at some things this session and teaching a class on how a bill becomes law, I've noticed a couple of things. And one is that not all the bills have a bill digest. And what a bill digest is the Reader's Digest version of what the bill's about. I've also noticed that some more of the titles, and this is not new on this one, that the titles say lovely things. And then you read the bill and you go, what? That's not really what that bill does. So on the bill 1296, the title, Safe and Supportive Public Education System. Well, what I think it should say is something along the lines of deciding when parents really need to be involved. Very different title than Safe and Supportive Public Education System. So we need to be aware of these kinds of games, but the idea that not all of the bills have digests, that the titles are sometimes very disingenuous. And of course, you know, you're going to put lipstick on a pig. But, you know, that's not how it should be in public policy. You should be honest about what's really happening in the bill. And then also on the LegWallGov, where you are able to send comments into your legislator, they ask for a special format for your phone number. And it's like, oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. So one is that all the numbers go together. Well, I tried that like three times and that didn't work. And then the other format is to put the 425 in parentheses or 206, whichever. And then put the next three numbers, hyphen, and then the next four numbers. But if you put a space between the parentheses and the first number, it may work and then it won't work. And so then you take the space out. That is absurd. So, you know, I have written to the legislature computer system and told them that I am so surprised that some of the things that as a legislator I was able to do on their website in less than 5 minutes, the other night took me almost an hour. And so it's of great concern to me that if you had a very functional website and now you have more tools and you have, you know, more experience in using computers, why didn't you make it more complicated? That is a very interesting question. So when I was teaching my class, they also found some issues, and I asked them to go ahead and write to the computer people and let them know that as students, they found this to be very difficult, because we want people to access government information as easily and quickly as possible. And that's not happening. So anyway, I'm going to go over one last time the bad bills in my mind. Senate Bill 5181, Companion 1296. Second one, House Bill 1334, which raises your taxes. Senate Bill 5434, which, the other one was Senate Bill 5103. Sorry, 5103. That's the one that puts at the front of the line illegal immigrants in front of citizens who may need to have their issues taken before the bodies that they would go through. And I'm not saying that the process shouldn't happen, but they shouldn't be at the front of the line. And at this point, they're being put at the front of the line to usurp the federal rulings and putting us as a state in the notice of we are not being a collaborative state. And, you know, we've lost several of our chairmanships that were from this state, and they were able to bring money to our county and our state that was very generous, sometimes too generous, because some of the expenditures that the county made on some of those federal funds that Senator Murray got us, I did not think were spent properly. But you can only fight your peers so much. So anyway, those will not be happening now. And I'm sure DOGE will find some of them, because you will, or they will. And so again, 5103 is that one. The good bill, Senate Bill 5434 on the emergency powers, I'm very pleased that it's nonpartisan, and the governor in his opening speech said he agreed. So that bill should be able to go through, and that is a good bill. And I want you to be able to be able to evaluate what's a good bill. So again, looking at who are the prime sponsors, is it all one party or not? That is an important decision. And after you read the bill, look at the title. And if the title is like lipstick on a pig, that's not right either. So usually that's a symbol that things are not going well. So with those pieces of information, I hope you will be a more informed citizen, because it takes all of us to preserve our freedom and to know what our Constitution says and to be able to live in a free country where we can be a beacon on a hill, as President Reagan once said. So good night, and I will see you soon. Thank you.
Kathy will be back next week with another new episode of Behind the Scenes right here on Valley 104.9 Northwest Eclectic.